modiga människor. Hello and welcome to Modiga Människor, which in English means brave people. This is episode number 113, and my name is Soja Zachariasdotter, and I've been running this channel for a little more than 4 years now. How can you support this channel? You can either subscribe on YouTube or give a donation to the channel. I also want to send my gratitude to all those people who already do and all the people who watch. The channel also have a backup at Rumble, and you can also listen on Spotify or Podbean. We also have a homepage, which is modigamänniskor.se. Now I want to introduce and welcome Dr. Shankara Shetty. He's with us live from South Africa. Hello, Dr. Shankara Shetty. Now you need to remove. Your mic is on.
There we go. Hi, Zoya. Hello to all of you.
Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, we were talking a little before here, and it's like it's half a year since we talked latest. And can you give us a little update? What happened in South Africa, and what is the things you have seen the last 6 months?
I think when we last spoke, we were in the Delta wave, and we were we in South Africa, there hasn't been much of a vaccine uptake, and there hasn't been much restriction and lockdown, so people don't really follow it too closely, and there's very little way of enforcing that. But we got through the Delta wave by the end of December. Things had settled down. And by January, we started with the Omicron wave. With Omicron, it's a much milder variant. We haven't had very much mortality with it. With the first Omicron variant, we noticed that it had a propensity to cause nerve injury. And so patients were presenting with more nerve symptoms, tingling of hands and feet, nerve root pain from the spine, depression. We've had patients tend towards psychosis post eighth day. But we noticed a very similar trend to the illness in that the first 7 days was the viral phase. And from the eighth day onwards, we started to have other symptoms, neuropathic symptoms. And we treated those in very much the same way as a severe allergic reaction or a severe immune dysregulation. And these immune dysregulations can target certain areas. And so this time around with Omicron, it seemed to target nerves. But of course, with the appropriate treatment, we've had good recoveries. We haven't had very much, very many patients getting critically ill. We are now in the BA4, BA5 Omicron variant wave. There's been a change in the presentation in that we're seeing a lot more gastrointestinal symptoms once again. But again, a very mild wave. People seem to get through it very easily. In South Africa, we have about 75% of the population that has not taken the vaccine. And with them, with Omicron, we've seen reinfections in that population. Those that had either the wild type, the beta, or the Delta variant are prone to getting reinfected. But that reinfection is generally mild and transient. It is more almost a software update to your already existent immune program. So those patients tend to have very transient illness. So we haven't had any severe COVID cases since January. However, with this new BA4, BA5 variant, we're noticing that the people that are getting into trouble are those that have been double vaxxed and boosted. There seems to be some immune interaction at play with the infection and the kind of immunity this vaccination provides. So the BA4, BA5 wave has now been on for about 3 to 4 weeks in South Africa. And I've had quite a few fully vaccinated boosted patients getting into trouble in the viral phase of the illness. So by the second or third day, we notice clotting events showing up. We've noticed an increase in their biomarkers. And so for vaccinated patients, I've started doing the biomarkers a lot earlier so that I can pick out those that might get into trouble and change the direction with which we treat them. I think the vaccine is eventually coming to show how it's going to influence the immunity towards the infection itself, and not in a good way.
You mentioned this clotting. Can you describe more? So,
how this came about, Zoya, being a general practitioner, I'm exposed to patients and the illness itself, and I got to examine them closely and try and figure out what's going on. With the first Omicron variant in January, it was routine that patients that deteriorated on the eighth day would get their biomarkers done to give us an indication of severity and, of course, to gauge their response to the change in treatment. But what we found with the early Omicron variant was that on the eighth day, those that deteriorated showed no significant increase in biomarkers. So it became very difficult to plot that worsening. So I had to use clinical improvement as a measure of treatment success. The only biomarker that seemed to go up in some patients was interleukin-6. And of course, I couldn't tie that to disease severity, because there were some patients who presented back with severe neuropathic symptoms but didn't have this marker go up. So we treated very symptomatically. However, in this second variant or iteration of Omicron, I was expecting the same, no real significant biomarker increase. But within the first 2 weeks, I had two patients that were fully vaccinated and boosted that presented to me on the third day of illness, which is in the other waves unremarkable. It's just a viral illness at that point. But both these patients suddenly had cardiac arrests, luckily, in my practice. They went into what's known as asystole, where the heart actually just stopped. Luckily, we were able to resus both of them, and we continued with their treatment. But that drew my attention to something else happening in these patients, because that never happened to the COVID pandemic at all in the first 7 days of the illness. So I started to do biomarkers on the vaccinated patients very early on. The day they presented, I drew bloods to see where we're at. And I started noticing a significant increase in some of them in their interleukins, their C-reactive protein, and their D-dimers. Now, the interleukin is an indication of an immune response. The CRP is an indicator of inflammation. And the D-dimer is an indication of clotting or clotting events. So with those patients that showed these elevated levels, we started to change treatment very quickly with them and start antihistamines and steroids and anticoagulation. But what I found was that some patients would have only their interleukins and CRPs go up, and they would, with standard symptomatic treatment, resolve those symptoms. However, with those that had their D-dimers go up with the other two, those were the ones that were at risk of having a severe illness. And so now all vaccinated patients presenting with the infection get these biomarkers done early so that we can figure out who's at risk and change course of treatment timeously. Previously, the change in course was dictated by the eighth day and a worsening on that day. So what we're seeing is that in vaccinated patients, and especially those double vaccinated and boosted, I haven't seen this very often, or I haven't seen it at all in patients that have taken a single vaccine. Very few that have taken a double vaccine get into trouble, but it seems to be prevalent amongst those who have recently taken a booster. when they get Omicron, it seems to trigger a very severe reaction. And of course, with the clotting, we've there was a comparison done between Portugal and South Africa. Both countries have a predominance of the BA4, BA5 variant of Omicron. Portugal is 95 to 100% vaccinated, 95% fully vaccinated. South Africa is only 25% vaccinated. But if you compare the statistics between the two countries, Portugal has a very high death rate compared to South Africa. And the only difference I see there is the vaccination status of these patients. So I think it becomes very important for those countries that have high vaccination rates to understand the change in the progression of the illness. Because we've noticed in countries with high vaccination rates, a death rate that still remains high in spite of a milder variant.
For me, it's, I've been also looking into numbers from the shots. But I mean, when you explain it like this, it should be so. How can you continuing with the jabs?
Zoya, the vaccination campaign and the choice to vaccinate our way out of this pandemic was flawed from the start. If you look at science and from the basic science, it was flawed. It didn't make scientific sense to go down this road. It might have made economic sense. It might have made socio-political sense, but it didn't make any scientific health sense. And that's the reason we're sitting where we are. Quite early on in the pandemic, we realized that this is a biphasic illness. And the second part of the illness was where all the mortality and morbidity resided. And the second part is an immune response to spike protein. So the mortality and morbidity of COVID illness is dictated by this immune response. So coronavirus is not the primary pathogen of COVID illness. Spike protein is. And coronavirus is just a vector. So it's the spike protein that's the toxin that harms people. So I think the pandemic is less about a virus and more about a response to a pathogenic protein. So embarking on a mass vaccination campaign was illogical from the start. Killing the virus is not what's going to solve the problem. We needed to treat patients and understand how the disease progresses to curb the mortality and morbidity. And of course, seeing that it's an immune reaction that causes the mortality and morbidity. And of course, seeing that it's taken us this long to educate the general medical community about this kind of immune response, it would be almost reckless without that understanding to try an impact on the immunity of the planet without understanding the natural response to the virus immunologically. And that's where we are now. We've affected the immune response of the entire planet without really understanding what it's going to do. And it's of no real benefit in that it was not the virus itself that was the problem. It was the spike protein that was the problem. And that's a double-edged sword in that the vaccine makes your body make spike protein. And we should have avoided that at all costs because the spike protein is a likely pathogen.
Can you tell us about the toxicity of the spike protein, and it's like you say, it's also an effect of taking the shot.
When we looked at coronavirus during the infection, we looked at the spike protein on the virus and tried to figure out, our aim was to figure out how it works, how it attaches to the body, how it gets the virus into the cells, that kind of thing, being the main domain that binds to receptors. But when the research was done on the spike protein and we figured out its structure, its similarities to other proteins, we quickly realized that it has a very broad pathogenic ability. Mm-hmm. Now, what we found is that spike protein causes endothelial injuries. So it damages the lining of blood vessels. And with that, we saw the blood clots and heart attacks and strokes and that kind of thing, which tied into what we had expected. We also found GP120, which is a protein that's found in HIV. It is a protein that suppresses immunity. And because of the similarities to this particular protein, we expected spike protein to cause immunosuppression. And of course, with that immunosuppression, we expected that latent viruses would resurface. We expected that cancers in recession would resurface. Because if you damage someone's immunity, then you'd see all these latent illnesses show up again. We now have become aware that the GP120 part of this was actually deliberately made simply to suppress immunity so that our immunity doesn't damage the vaccine. It was put there to prolong the vaccine so that our immunity doesn't destroy it too quickly. But of course, if it lasts too long, then it destroys your immunity for a prolonged period. And that causes other consequences. So we expected the immune suppression. And of course, now people are talking about vaccine-induced acquired immunodeficiency, vaccine-induced AIDS. And that is simply because of this protein suppressing immunity. So many people that have taken the vaccine are immunosuppressed and more prone to developing infections. We've also found that the vaccine, the protein, the spike protein, has similarities to certain prions. Now, prions are proteins that are pathogenic, and they are implicated in nerve disorders, neuropathies, dementia, Alzheimer's, that kind of thing. They are misfolded, and so they cause illness. And we expected from seeing the similarity to prions that spike protein will cause neurodegenerative diseases. And now with the vaccinations, we've seen that come to bear. CJD, worsening of dementia, Alzheimer's, a whole lot of neuropathy that we see. We also know that spike protein can get into the nucleus of a cell. It has that ability. And when in the nucleus of a cell, it was shown to inhibit certain enzymes, the BRCA enzyme, which is vitally important in repairing DNA. Now, your DNA gets damaged every day by various different exposures to sunlight, to chemicals, but your DNA has the ability to repair itself. So we are double-stranded DNA organisms, and one strand can always serve as a template to repair the other, and it requires this BRCA enzyme to read and repair any DNA damage. Now, spike protein inhibits this enzyme, and so damaged DNA cannot repair itself. If that is the case, what we'd expect to see is damaged DNA, if the damage is sufficient to not be vital anymore, those cells will die. But if that damage remains vital, it's likely that those cells with damaged DNA would turn into cancer cells. And we'd expect to see a worsening of cancers. Now, when I look at the side effects that we've seen with the vaccines and the adverse events thus far, it follows that exact pattern. Yet we seem to be refusing to acknowledge it. All the science points in that direction. So as you can see, spike protein is quite pathogenic, and I would go as far as to classify it as a toxin, because it has this wide diversity of effect on the human body itself. So manufacturing a vaccine using spike protein as the base was the incorrect choice. Spike protein being toxic should have been avoided at all costs.
There was on the news, I think 2 weeks ago, this health doctor, at least they presented him like that, that if you use too much D vitamin, it can actually cause cancer. They're promoting it on the news. And when you say that, it makes sense.
I think, Zoya, I've seen that here in South Africa as well. The side effects, adverse events, and deaths that arise from the mass vaccination at some point are going to become too widespread to be ignored and disregarded. Now, that's already started happening. So the powers that be need to justify these side effects and deaths. And so we're going to see people publishing things about a wide diversity of things we're exposed to, and they will point to them and say, this causes heart attacks and that causes strokes. And so they're trying to justify this increase. Now, if you look at vitamin D causing cancers, people have been taking vitamin D for many years. But it's strange that since the vaccination campaign, there hasn't been an increase in vitamin D usage since the vaccine campaign, but there's been a significant increase in cancer since the vaccine campaign. Now, people will try and justify the increase in cancers by saying, oh, there's other things at play. But if you look at all-cause mortality over the past years, the significant increase in all-cause mortality since the vaccines have started, drawing that timeline and understanding the change and when it occurred, is quite telling. There's very little more that we can attribute this to, but the vaccines itself. So yes, there's going to, I mean, they are talking now about an increase in myocarditis in children, but you'll see more reports about children that have previously had myocarditis on football fields and taking part in sport. That was always insignificant. But today it's significant. But they will try and normalize these adverse events so that we don't look into the vaccines. And that's what's going to happen. The people that have made the mistakes will not want to admit to those mistakes. And so they will find a scapegoat in something.
And I just want to correct myself. People pointed it out. It was vitamin C they were talking about. I mean, but it's the same.
Yeah. Look, I think with the vitamins itself, Zoya, as much as an overuse of vitamins can put a strain on your kidneys, I don't think that there's any real toxicities that we need to be concerned about with those, with the use of vitamins. Yes, there has been since the start of the pandemic, I think, a bit of overuse of vitamins. People were afraid, and so this was the easiest way to try and negate the effects. But I think we've got to be cautious with how we use vitamins. They're not really necessary if we have a good, well-balanced diet. So, yeah, I think the pointing at vitamin C is just scapegoating a problem that's very real. I don't think vitamin C has the ability to a 500% increase in cancers. And that's what we've seen, very significant increases in a wide range of different illnesses. And I don't think subtle changes in the consumption of these vitamins actually explains those significant changes.
But now I'm very, I hear that there's something with my voice here. I can hear myself, but I want to talk about the situation in South Africa compared to the situation in Sweden. You said that people are very skeptical there. I mean,
yes, Zoya, from the start, South Africa is a country where we, as a medical fraternity, and I think as a population as well, we're pretty difficult to govern in that we've come from a history of apartheid. It took a lot of protests. It took a lot of civil unrest. It took a lot of people non-compliance by the population to actually change the course of our country. And up to this point, we are still very skeptical of our leaders. We don't trust everything we are told. Now, when the pandemic came along, yes, there was a lot of fear. And this was propagated globally. So many of our leaders just followed the global narrative. And I think a lot of the population believed in what was happening because it was coming from a collaboration with global players. So they trusted that the government is probably doing the right thing this time around. But very quickly, information started to surface about suppression of information, about the vaccines, side effects, and that kind of thing. And as soon as that kind of information came to the fore, there was a lot of skepticism amongst South Africans about taking the vaccine. As well, the attempted mandating of the vaccine was seen in South Africa as an affront to our freedoms, and we should be given choices. So yes, a lot of institutions mandated the vaccine. There were a lot of protests. There were a lot of legal formations that came together to help people fight the vaccines. So we've not been quiet about the vaccine policies. Neither have we just capitulated and taken it. And as more and more of the side effects have come to the fore, there's been a almost complete stall of the vaccination campaign in South Africa. I know that our president, with I think the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, was to establish a large vaccine production plant here in South Africa to supply the rest of Africa with vaccines. But that has actually been shelved simply because there were no orders for vaccines at all. And so they've had to reverse those decisions. So we're sitting at a point in South Africa where nobody really wants the vaccines anymore. We've all understood that the lockdowns, the isolation, and all those kind of measures that were taken were more detrimental to our society than anything else. Government has tried, in trying to appease the Western powers that be, to try and change rules and regulations so that they can mandate vaccinations and social distancing and population control measures. But we've been quick to educate the public about these agendas, and we've been relatively successful in stopping them from doing that. So we're in a position where the government realizes that there's an election coming up. It realizes that it's lost the trust of the nation itself, and it needs to find ways to rebuild that trust. And all around us are well aware of the agendas at play. And so South Africa is in a position where we're more than willing to challenge the government on what it's been doing. And of course, we want to hold people to account. There are companies that have mandated the vaccine for their staff. Those that refused to take the vaccine were forced to do weekly PCR tests at their expense. Now those very same companies, with the new information that's come out, have decided to drop the mandating of vaccines. As much as we welcome that kind of decision, there must be restitution for the harm that is caused. And so those companies must be pushed to rehire those that were unlawfully fired for not willing to take a vaccine. And of course, to compensate those that were forced to take a test every week just to stay employed. So we want to see that whatever decisions were made, people are responsible for those decisions. Nothing gets swept under the carpet in this country.
I mean, I really hope that Sweden will take after you, but I think in Sweden we still have a big trust in the government.
Yes, I've seen that in a majority of Western democracies. I think there's a bit of complacency about democracy and freedom because you'll have had it for so long. We've had to fight for it, and so we'll fight to keep it.
Shedding. What about shedding? I mean, I have a lot of people ask me about that.
I think, Zoya, shedding is something that's going to take a while to investigate and understand. There's a lot of mechanisms by which that could occur. There's been research for decades now into self-spreading vaccines, and we're not sure whether this is one of them, that you have a vaccine that could spread person to person. This is not a live vaccine, so it's unlikely. We know that shedding can occur via exosomes, which are vesicles that carry certain particles in them. We know that spike protein can be shed as well. We're not sure how that will enter the human body. Is it through the air, or does it require direct contact with people? Are they shedding it through their skin or through their lungs? We're well aware of pregnant mothers that were vaccinated who shed spike protein to their newborn infants, and that caused problems. So we know it's spread in breast milk. So there is this ability to shed. But I think the difference is that we are not shedding a virus. We are shedding a pathogenic protein. So it's almost becomes an environmental toxin that others get exposed to. And so the spike protein is, I think, vitally important in the pathology. And we need to understand how spike protein is made by these vaccines in the body and how we actually excrete them. And if shedding occurs, through which organs or through which surfaces are they shed? And contact with spike protein from an unvaccinated individual, we need to understand how that spike protein can get into them. Is it through respiration? Can we pick it up just through contact with people? How does that spike protein actually work? Now, we haven't yet accepted that the vaccines have certain blatant problems that are easily obvious from the research. So it's going to take a while for them to accept that shedding is occurring. I've noticed it with my staff and myself that ever since the vaccine campaign started in South Africa, my staff and have been complaining of fatigue, they're just almost feeling hungover, a constant feeling of, I'm not sure whether that's fatigue from dealing with this pandemic for such a length of time, just a psychological fatigue that we're going through, or it actually is shedding that's occurring. But it's been documented globally by people that have been exposed to vaccinated people and got unwell. We've also seen it with, we know that the vaccines very quickly influenced the female menstrual cycle and caused heavy bleeding, that kind of thing. And there's been many reported cases around the world of unvaccinated women having heavy bleeds when in contact with vaccinated women. So there's definitely some sort of transmission between vaccinated and unvaccinated, whether that is RNA based or whether it's spike protein needs to be investigated further.
Yeah, but it's a thing you can't really ignore. I mean, I've been hearing about women ever since the start of the vaccination. Unvaccinated women sitting at a dinner with new vaccinated women and yes, immediately having trouble with menstruation.
Yeah, this is, like you say, this is something that can't be ignored. But then the powers that be determine what we focus our attention on. I mean, if you look at mainstream media, if you look at all the people governing the attention of the planet, we've had hundreds of thousands of people killed by this vaccine and millions injured by it. Yet I'm yet to see a single report of an adverse event on mainstream media. So I think the ignorance is going to be telling. If we looked at the science, these reported cases of shedding of adverse events all should have been well looked into for us to understand clearly what's going on and to redirect. I'm not against vaccinations. I'm against the use of bad science that would injure people. Now, with the vaccine itself, we were in this great rush to produce a vaccine in the shortest space of time. And nobody looked at the fact that the vaccine in the middle of a pandemic was the wrong methodology to use in trying to curb this pandemic. Everyone just looked at the vaccine and we need to make it in the shortest space of time. And then it was celebrated that we managed to make a vaccine in 6 months and get it to market. Now, 2 years down the line, we know that the vaccine is not effective against the current variant. We know that the mutations of the virus have made the vaccine almost ineffective. But in 2 years, we've not been able to modify or tweak the current vaccine to make it more effective. So I draw an analogy. It's like gloating that in 6 months you managed to build a car, but in 2 years you couldn't fix a flat tire. So it makes me wonder, was that car ever meant to move? Because you seem to be satisfied with it standing there with the flat tire.
I feel so sad about what is happening and all the injured people who hasn't been given a voice. I'm completely shut down.
We're going to see a lot of psychological issues from the vaccination campaign, not necessarily from the vaccine itself. People were lied to. They were told that initially this is safe and effective. They were told that it will stop infection and transmission. Those goalposts kept moving. When we started to see vaccine failures, or what they call breakthrough infections, which is actually a vaccine failure, we realized the vaccine cannot stop infection and transmission. And then it was punted that the vaccine would prevent severe illness and death. That is not the work of a vaccine. A vaccine is to stimulate immunity. The prevention of severe illness and death is a therapeutic intervention. And so if you claim to protect against severe illness and death, then you're a therapeutic and you should be judged as such. You can't claim to be a vaccine and be tested using vaccine standards when the only benefit you give is a therapeutic benefit. So people were misguided from the start. And of course, they were coerced into taking the vaccine by being told it's the right thing to do, it's the best thing for society. The people that questioned the vaccines were ostracized, were thought to be selfish. They punted this in making people feel guilty about not wanting the vaccine. Of course, when they got as many as they could vaccinated using that and it stalled, then they started to mandate it in workplaces and forcibly get people to take the vaccine. So a majority of people that took the vaccine were either coerced into taking it or forced into taking it. And they did not do it for any true medical reason. Now, as the side effects come to bear, these people that thought they were doing the right thing by taking the vaccine will have a lot of issues to deal with once they realize that they could have harmed themselves and that they were misguided into doing this. And that's what I'm seeing with my patients. Unfortunately, they understand what has happened. But unfortunately, they have taken the vaccine, and a lot of the doctors that have encouraged them to do so are no more by their side when they're having those side effects. So my work has changed from trying to treat COVID, which I think we've figured out quite well, and it's moved on to trying to understand the vaccine side effects, the adverse events, and what the mechanisms are behind that, and then trying to actually negate them to help those that were injured by the vaccine itself.
This is so terrible. But I think we also have a big group who knew they were forced to do it. And those people also need to take a deal with all the emotions, knowing that they were forced. And at least it's with us. We don't talk about it.
The problem is those that push the vaccine. Those that believed it, those that pushed it onto other people, those that enforced it, when they realize the toxicity of it, there'll be a lot of guilt. There'll be a lot of guilt in that you were told it's safe. You took that rhetoric and used it to get other people to take the vaccine. There's a lot of people who coerced and coaxed family members and friends to take the vaccine, gave them reassurances, you know, said it's safe. Why do you listen to all these conspiracy theories? Take the vaccine, you know? Now that they've taken the vaccine and been injured by it, there'll be a lot of guilt with those people that propagated the vaccine. So we're going to deal with a host of different problems with society itself. Not only the vaccine adverse events, but also people will have to accept their gullibility. They'll have to accept that society needs to change. We basically deferred important decisions to other people, to so-called experts, to government, to so-called global regulatory authorities, which when they made mistakes, if not deliberately, we are not able to hold them accountable for those mistakes.
What do you think is the next step in all this?
I think humanity has been through a lot of trials and tribulations over all the centuries. But I think the most important thing is that we take the lessons. We can't undo the past. We can look at what's transpired. We can try and heal those who've been injured. But it all is worth nothing if we don't learn from our mistakes. This will happen again. It seems that there are people out there with an agenda. They know exactly what they want to achieve. They are using various means to do that. And if we don't realize that the course that humanity has taken is a wrong one and do the necessary to rectify that direction, we're bound to have this happen again. So I think we must take the lessons. Yes, people have been injured. We'll have to deal with that. There's always collateral damage. I don't think people realize that we are actually in a war. The artillery is no more a firearm. It is now a virus and a vaccine. And the deaths are no more in plain sight on killing fields. They are quietly in your bed at night and nobody notices. And that's the reason looking at all-cause mortality shows this stark picture. We've had a 40% increase in all-cause mortality since the start of the vaccines. Even in the deepest of crises in the past, all-cause mortality went up no more than 10%. Now, that's insurance agency statistics. They are in charge of deaths and insurance premiums, death policies. So I think they are a group that should be closely looked at, because they'll give us the true statistics. And they're not going to be willing to pay for vaccines that have caused death. So with that kind of increase, it's clear that there is more death now than there was during the First and Second World Wars. Yet people are oblivious to the fact that we're actually in a war. And of course, the people that promulgate such wars know exactly what they're doing. They know that the first and Second World War was too visible to all, and they could do this a lot more easily if people were unaware that they were at war.
What do they do with the numbers in South Africa? Here in Sweden, at least, they try to blame 919 persons' death on the unvaccinated. They kind of shuffling the numbers around.
I think in South Africa, that's not going to happen. Simply because we have a higher percentage of unvaccinated people. We allow not open, but robust debate. So there are many platforms, YouTube and Facebook and the rest, that people can get information. And people are open to discussing that kind of information. So it's going to be a tough road for the vaccinated to blame the unvaccinated here. And I think part of this vaccination campaign was about privilege and prejudice. Now, we've come from a racially divided society during apartheid. And we understand the dispensation of privilege and prejudice. And so when I look at what's been going on, During apartheid, the white population was privileged and the black population prejudiced. But you couldn't take a white person and make them black and take away their privilege. And neither could you take a black person and make him white and give him privilege. But now, prejudice and privilege will be based on a fake vaccination status. And you can take an unvaccinated, unprivileged person and vaccinate them and give them privilege. And you can take a double vaccinated person who refuses the booster and classify them unvaccinated and take away their privilege. So it's a way of dispensing privilege and prejudice rather than any health benefit. So it's about the control of individual freedoms rather than any benefit to our health. And we've seen that with the mandates, when people started to lose their jobs and were forced into taking the vaccine to keep their jobs, it brought back the reality of prejudice and privilege being dispensed based on this vaccine. And of course, everyone looked into it to see if it made any sense. And of course, when we realized it didn't make sense, then we realized that it's an agenda we don't want to follow. Because privilege and prejudice or equity in South Africa is very important.
I feel so much hope when I listen to you.
There always is hope, so yeah. I think it's just humanity needed to be awakened. We were quietly put into a slumber over the last 70 odd years. Modernization, democracy, technology, it's all been used to take away our individuality. And I think it's about time people, we've all taught to be conformists. We've rewarded conformity all these years. And so now we wonder why we're all sheep. It's because we've learned to be conformed, to conform to norms. And I think that's what needs to change. Society needs a completely new way of looking at the way we do things. South Africa has a very diverse population, both socioeconomically, racially, ethnically, politically. So, yeah, we call it a rainbow nation. But the rainbow nation requires the separation of colors and the celebration of each color. And so I think individuals are important in our country. Grouping us together like sheep will not suffice. And I think that's the reason South Africa has, I think, or will be at the forefront of this fight. In that we have a very strong movement, not against vaccination, but more against these coercive kind of policies and the bureaucratic red tape that takes away from our freedoms and our peace and security. So we want to address all these issues.
But when I listen to you, I mean, what I can feel and sense is that they have also, during this year, trying to take away something much bigger from us. And now it's we need to take it back. And
yeah, this is this has been something planned for a very long time. There's almost a spiritual war going on.
Yeah.
It's written in many religions about the darkest hours of humanity. And it seems like we're getting there very quickly. If I look at how this transpired, humanity or our population as a collective gave our power to politicians who were meant to protect and nurture us and keep us safe. But they long ago ceded that responsibility to so-called local and international regulatory authorities. And these regulatory authorities are not elected by us and are not representative of us. And of course, when they pass rules and regulations that go against our freedoms and our rights, then the government throws its arms up and says, oh, there's nothing we can do. But government and these regulatory authorities collude with each other to keep populations suppressed, so that they could stay in power. And so this has been going on for a long while. And I think the change will come with voting for people who understand what we need as a population. They've ignored us for too long, and all we got to do to win the war is ignore them and take ownership of our own societies. I live in a small town, Zoya, Port Edward. It's a one-street town. We're surrounded by a lot of farms, a lot of rural settlements. There's a diversity of population in socioeconomic, racial groups. But we've, over the years, seen the incompetence of our government. So we have problems with water and electricity and all those kind of things. And recently, we've come together as a community, and we're actually looking at trying to get a subsistence lifestyle going, with the farming community collecting water and supplying the town, and getting them to grow food that the town would consume, providing our own electricity sources. We're a very big fishing destination on the coast. So yeah, God will provide. It's just for us to look at where to fish.
So I have a question from a person here. What we can do in Sweden, because when she listened, or him, I don't know, to you, it seems like it's very light in South Africa, but here in North, in Sweden, I mean, I truly believe that everything will be well, but we're not in that position yet. People still believe so much in the government.
I think, it's the hardships that teach us the lessons. And I think every country that's had wide vaccination campaigns will eventually not be able to ignore the fact that the vaccines have harmed them. And the only thing you can do to change the future is to hold those who've done this responsible and accountable. And that has to happen. If you don't hold your politicians accountable and responsible for the decisions they made, then society is going to be at a loss, complete loss. And in South Africa itself, the way we do that is to empower the politicians that actually follow what we as a general society want. There are a lot of motives at play, even here in South Africa. I think our president's torn between following the West and the agenda of the West, and of course having some relationship with Russia. Russia was instrumental in our fight for democracy, and so he's torn between a rock and a hard place, and that puts us in an ideal position to rock the boat. In that he's got to listen to both sides of the story. Now, in the Western world, there's just one unitary narrative. And I think that's where the problem lies. This is going to divide the planet, but it'll divide the planet along very unusual lines, not ethically, not racially, but I think more along humanitarian lines, among lines of governments that take care of their populations. You can see that already happening around the world. That in the Eastern bloc of countries, governments don't have the dominance that Western governments do. And so populations were not constrained like in the West, like in Europe. I don't think the Eastern governments have the ability to constrain their populace in that way. So, yeah. Europe's going to have to stand up and fight for itself. And let's hope that it doesn't take too much of pain to open the eyes. Because at some point, you're going to have to stand up and fight. And the pain will dictate when you do that.
But when I listen to you, I feel so much hope. So I think everything will be okay.
It will. I think Zoya, there's always a plan, a higher plan. And as human beings, no matter the evils we face, I think I always believed in nature and nature's ability to right everything. We are just passing ships as humanity on this planet. And so, yeah, we must be very cautious about how we impact on it. So as much as there are people with these grandiose agendas, I think that they have wholly miscalculated. So it will cause a lot of damage, destruction, heartache. In some way, I think that was necessary because we were becoming complacent as a planet and we were destroying it with our own selfish needs. And I think it was necessary. But the people that think that they're going to profit from this and are in control of it, I think have miscalculated, and they'll realize very soon that their plans cannot come to bear.
So we're going to fix that flat tires.
Yes, we have to. No, it's with even with governments, Oya. I think people need to come together on the ground and make new formations. I say this to my patients all the time. They know what Donald Trump says. They know what Biden said yesterday, but they don't know their neighbor's name. And that's not the way humanity should be run. You can never have a sense of security, peace, community, if you don't take an interest in the people around you. So I think with the globalization and mass media and all that kind of thing, it's taken our attention away from the things that are important. And when everything collapses, we'll be forced to put our attention back on the things around us. And that might not be a bad thing.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Chankara. This is like the perfect ending of a not so perfect story, but I mean, thank you so much. And thank you for all you watching. Yeah.
Thank you for having me, Zoya. And just always to remember, every cloud has a silver lining. We just got to look at it.
Thank you. Yeah, we end there. And bye to you all. Okay, bye.
Thank you.